Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of What the Hell? And a very serious subject this time, ALS. It's also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. It's a terrible disease that really affects people very, very quickly. One of those people, Eric Stevens. And Eric played for the St. Louis Rams when the Rams were there. He has been an L.A. city firefighter. Also joining us, his wife Amanda and his brother Brett. And I want to start, Eric, with you explaining to everybody what is ALS.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure.
ALS is a progressive neurodegenerative disease. It affects your voluntary muscles, so your ability to breathe, eat, swallow, your ability to walk, talk, use your hands and arms. It slowly progresses and you decline in all those areas. And ultimately, you're unable to breathe and you die.
It's it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough, and it's a disease that has only had two medications in the past that can help people. To what extent, I'm not exactly sure, because I don't know if it extends life or just reduces pain. But there is a new one on the market. We're going to talk about, not on the market yet, but they're trying to get it to market, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. But you were diagnosed in August.
Yes.
And was that when the decline started?
I started noticing symptoms back in March. My hand was becoming weak. My speech was becoming slower, and it was hard for me to talk. And also I noticed that I was getting fatigued a lot easier. So when I'd work out or we'd go to fires, I was a lot more fatigued than usual.
Did you for the first, say, weeks and or months, go into kind of denial?
Yeah, I would go on Google and I'd search my symptoms.
Yeah, that's the worst thing in the world, isn't it?
Yeah,
I hate that.
Right.
Yeah. You've got every disease. It's kind of like when I was in college and I took Psych 101. I had every disorder in mental health that there was to have.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's dangerous to do those sort of things, but that's what you did.
Yeah, so that's what I did, and everything kept popping up, ALS. And I just kept checking all the boxes, and as time went on, I was progressively getting worse, so it went from weakness in my hand to dropping tools, dropping weights. I could hardly do a pull-up without my left hand sliding off. My brothers, my mom, my dad, my wife Amanda, they all noticed that my speech, too, was getting worse. Amanda and I got married in July, and leading up to it was when I had all these symptoms, but I didn't want to stress anyone out. I just wanted to, you know, focus on our wedding and our honeymoon and, you know, focus on that. And so I didn't really mention anything to anyone or family.
So Amanda, you didn't know?
No. I knew he had mentioned his left hand a few times and like he said, his speech a little bit, but obviously we didn't think this would be what it was. He didn't really mention it to me.
Did you feel like at some point you needed to say to him, I think something's wrong?
Not really, to be honest. I didn't know the extent of it until after our wedding when we got back from our honeymoon. He kind of told me what he thought was going on, and then, you know, that hit us pretty hard. Obviously, when we found the diagnosis, but I didn't realize how serious it was.
And I didn't really tell her what I was finding, you know, on the internet, and I didn't want to scare her or anyone else, you know. So,
at some point, though, you did.
Yeah, well, I had an idea, and I thought that ALS was, I mean, it was just, I was checking every box, you know.
And did you sit everybody down one night?
No. When we got back from our honeymoon, I told Amanda, I go, hey, you know, this is what's going on. I'm checking every single box, and we need to go see a neurologist as soon as we can. And, of course, Amanda was super supportive, and you know, there's no way that you have ALS. You're too young, you're too strong, you're in the best shape of your life. We just got married, you know.
Got a whole life ahead of you.
We have our whole life ahead of us. We're talking about, you know, what we're going to name our kids or where we're going to buy our first house, you know. We weren't thinking about ALS, right? It's the last thing you think about, and you don't think it's going to happen to you. So we got our an appointment with the neurologist, you know, pretty quick, and we moved things pretty fast. And within probably 3 or 4 weeks, I was diagnosed with ALS.
Are you taking some kind of medication now?
So, like you said earlier, there's only two approved medications for ALS. One in which really doesn't do anything. It's supposed to ease your symptoms a little bit. And the other one, which is Riluzole, they think that it may or may not prolong your life for 2, maybe 3 months. And they don't know for sure. That's just what they have. So that's your only option at this point.
That brings us to this new medication.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So there's this medication. And, you know, at the moment, the name is escaping me. Well, what's the name of it?
So it's called a Neurone. And it's
Neurone,
from the company,
right.
Brainstorm.
Brainstorm.
And they're a stem cell a company.
Right. Small. They're back east. And,
yes.
And they have a big operation in Jerusalem as well.
Right. Correct.
And so basically, if I have this right, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but in talking with the CEO, he sort of explained it this way, that they take stem cells from your bone marrow, I guess. They take it out of your spine.
Correct.
And then they do something to clean them all up, get the disease out of there. I don't know how they do that. There's technical terms.
Right.
And then they freeze it. And then they put it in an injection device.
Yeah.
And then when you need it, they send that to the hospital, and then you get injected. And I don't know how many treatments that one gets. I'm sure it's based on whatever the need might be.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing to me is that they describe these little cells that go back in is almost like little Amazon delivery trucks.
Yeah,
and
right.
Taking the good stuff in to mix up with the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does that work in your understanding?
I mean, in a nutshell, you explained that pretty good.
Okay, Brett.
Brett,
you want
to
chime in on that?
Better about
yeah,
too.
I mean, essentially what they're saying is you these stem cells are encouraged to take the pathway all the way to the brain, break the blood-brain barrier, which has been like a big issue with this disease, actually breaking that blood-brain barrier. And what it's doing is it's either helping with inflammatory causes from the disease, or you're actually what they call as neurotrophic factors encourages to grow more like neuro tissue, and so that's kind of what they're hoping it does.
Now they've gone through several phases, if you will. They went through, I guess they're on phase 3 now.
Right.
And each phase involves X amount of people. They test it. There's blind, double blind, all that kind of study thing going on with clinicals. And so now they're at a point where they've got 200 people involved in a study. And that study information should be released sometime in October of 2020, according to the company. And then if all goes well, fingers crossed, then they would send that on to the FDA. The FDA would then decide if they want to approve that. They could ask for it to be fast-tracked. We don't know whether they would or not, but that's how drugs get marketed in this country. And so at some point, if the FDA says, yes, this is fine, let's do it, then you would be able to get it. But that could be 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road. And what we pointed out earlier was that you have a window of about 2 to 5 years once you're diagnosed with the disease.
Exactly. So they give you, they say roughly 2 to 5 years on average. But paralysis comes a lot sooner than that. So these are very difficult years. You're talking about 24-hour care, a ventilator, wheelchair. You lose your ability to speak, swallow, breathe, and do everything that, you know, that a normal person can.
It's not a new disease. It's one that every generation has to learn about in a different way. It was many years ago that Lou Gehrig, the baseball player with the New York Yankees, got it. And then they called it Lou Gehrig's disease.
Right.
And for a long time in that period, people came to know what ALS was because this great baseball hero had gotten it. And so they were able to kind of put one on one together. That helped. Now we don't have Lou Gehrig. And a lot of people, and I'm not saying everybody, but there are a lot of young people that don't know who Lou Gehrig was. They don't know that he had the disease. So that kind of approach isn't there anymore, but you guys have a different approach. Yeah. And what you're doing is a hashtag, which is appropriate in today's social media. Why don't you tell us about that?
So it's not a rare disease, you know, and that's kind of a misconception. It's an uncommon disease, but because you're, as soon as you're diagnosed, you have 2 to 5 years on average to live. People are being diagnosed, and people are quickly dying. So they say every 90 minutes someone's diagnosed, and every 90 minutes someone is passed away from ALS. So it's not rare. It's uncommon, but it's definitely not rare. And what we're doing, my brother could probably speak more about it because he's the one that really started it and got it moving.
Brett,
yeah,
you want to talk about it?
So we started this hashtag AXALS.
That's AXEALS.
Right. And so, we're using social media to our benefit to basically spread the word about this disease.
And you're using axe because like a fire axe.
Exactly.
And so that's where the name comes from. And it picked up. It took off pretty quickly through social media, didn't it?
It did. We started the hashtag. Actually, a friend of ours posted a picture in front of a fire truck with a big banner and said hashtag AXALS. And since then, different fire stations from not only Los Angeles but throughout the country and even all over the world actually are posting these photos with the AXALS and their hashtagging it, and social media has been a huge part of spreading the awareness.
How does that feel?
I mean, it's great. It's something that we need to do. Yeah.
But how does it feel to see others picking up on the message?
The support's been overwhelming, to say the least. I mean, it's incredible to see how many people are reaching out to try to extend their hand and help not just my brother, but, you know, the 30,000 plus Americans that are dying from this disease right now, if not more, from, you know, thousands more all across the world. So the fact that that we're helping spread this word and there's definitely change on the forefront, like my brother was saying. Like, there's treatments out there right now that are just kind of caught up in these clinical trials, you know, and the fact that they're there and we have stuff that are actually helping people right now, that's huge for us. So getting that word out, and hopefully we can actually make a change, and we could treat this disease, you know, like a unique disease that it is.
There's something inherently odd about the idea that there is something that is helpful, but because it's not released yet, it can't help you.
Yeah,
and that is kind of an odd head scratcher. Mm-hmm. Is it available in other countries? Could you go to Mexico? Could you go to Canada? Could you get it somewhere else?
So you can go out in the country and get stem cell, not brainstorm and neuron specifically, but you can get stem cell in the country. But if one's to do that, you're disqualified for any trial here in the States. So the best thing that's going on right now for ALS patients is brainstorms and neuron. And it's the closest to being approved. So that's what we're holding on to. So if you go out in the country and try to help yourself, you get disqualified in the States for potentially being able to get the best treatment that's here for ALS in the last 150 years.
If one of the medications that's available minimizes the symptoms,
right,
we believe.
Absolutely.
And if another one extends life maybe a few months, mm-hmm. we believe. What does this one do?
So this one is shown, and there's people that have been the phase 2 trial. There's patients that have been early on in the phase 3 trial that it has completely stopped the progression. And some people are even having full reversal. So,
really?
So there's a former Navy pilot, Matt Bellina, who was one of the only ALS patients to use the right to try law that just recently passed. And he's he was quadriplegic, had a ventilator when he was sleeping. After the treatment, the brainstorm neuron treatment, he's off his breather, his ventilator, and he's able to stand up out of his wheelchair and walk.
So no wonder you're feeling this sense of I want it too.
Right. So here there is a treatment for the first time ever that has shown unprecedented result. And this is the first time ever. And there's people dying every single day right now of ALS, and there's a treatment there that could help. And we know that it's already gone through phase 1, phase 2, so it's proven to work. It's proven that it's safe. So why isn't it in the hands of all these thousands of people that they could potentially help?
Sounds to me like a conundrum.
Well, yeah. There's just so much red tape that you got to cross in order to get something like this to you. And I mean, for somebody who's dying, I mean, to do nothing, it's like you're talking about 100% chance you're going to die. You have no hope right now. Your best hope is hoping to get into a double-blinded placebo trial, you know, where you got a 50% chance of getting this drug. You may potentially be getting sugar water stabbed in your back. But then you got a guy like Matt Bellina, who didn't get accepted in the trial, who gets to use this treatment under the Right to Try Act, he's currently the only one in the world that's known to get this treatment for sure without being, hey, maybe it was a placebo, maybe it wasn't, and he's going to get 9 total treatments, and just like my brother said, you know, he's going to be on Nightline in a week or so, actually walking without the assistance of a wheelchair.
Now, let me ask you about the Right to Try Act. Explain that.
So the Right to Try Act is a great step forward as far as accessing these treatments that are in the trial. But there's some areas that need to be improved. For instance, not everyone could capitalize with the Right to Try because companies don't have any incentive to allow people to use Right to Try. So in other words,
could you do this? Could you do Right to Try?
So I can't. I can't through Brainstorm because the company has to agree with that. And this year,
the Right to Try is only one side of the problem, I guess you'd say.
I was just curious if that was something that was an avenue.
Well, the reason Matt Bellina was able to do is, one, they kind of named the law after him. It's like the Matt Bellina law. But the fact that I believe Matt tried to get in the trial, but his progression was a little bit too far to qualify to get in the trial, in which I think he fought for this Right to Try Act. The problem with the Right to Try, it is a great step forward. I mean, it's got all the right intentions. I think when they wrote the law, they didn't want this law to only be for the rich. They didn't want drug companies to take advantage of a patient, willing to spend God knows how much money to try to save their life. So I think somewhere in the law, they actually wrote a clause basically saying that the company themselves would be responsible for any indirect costs. So you're talking about a company that would basically have to go out of their own pocket to pay for a patient. And then if you're a small biotech company like Brainstorms Neuron, they can't keep up with that demand. And why would they be able to say, okay, Eric, let's let you do this, but not the 30,000 other Americans
right.
that are.
Right.
I mean, so it doesn't really give any incentive for a company to just help one person as opposed to trying to help everybody.
So what's the answer? The answer is you got to wait.
Well, hopefully there's something that, I mean, if the government would understand that we haven't solved the problem yet, and there is an obvious problem because the right to try was designed to help people. I mean, that's what they wanted to do. But if it's only helping one person right now, and this law was passed a couple years back, you know, why isn't helping everybody? That's obvious to any of us that
have you explored that with the legislatures?
We actually were just all three of us and our other two brothers and our cousin Casey. We were actually up in Washington D.C. where we had several meetings with Congress, senators, White House representatives.
How did that go?
HHS. I think we definitely got our word across. I think we got a lot of promise from these officials that told us that they would step in and do something for it and at least see through to, you know, try to make something happen. Whether or not it's the conclusion we want, who knows, you know, but...
Yeah, but you're shaking the trees.
Yeah.
Right.
This, I mean, we're in a really unique time because, you know, 5 years ago, there wasn't all these treatments that were in the pipeline for ALS, but... Because of the Ice Bucket Challenge, because of Pete Frades and his family, all this money, all this awareness that was brought to the world, all this attention, has gave all the people with ALS now hope, and it's a whole new time now there because there is treatment there and it's there and it's right on the doorstep, but we just don't have access to it and. And there's something has to change because too many people are dying every single day while a treatment is sitting on a shelf. And it's you take a step back and you look at and it's not that complicated. I mean, this is common sense here, right? There's people dying every single day. There's a treatment for the first time ever.
But is there enough of it? Isn't that part of the question?
Well, yeah. So, and that's another problem. So, if you're talking about a 10 to 12 year trial program, and then if you are a small company, like we keep going back to Brainstorms Neuron, that's another issue that we're talking about. So, you're talking, you know, maybe they're in October 2020 that they'd be able to give the FDA the actual data from their trials, in which case the FDA, even if they're fast tracked, maybe 6 months at best till they're actually done. You know, analyzing the data, in which case now they give the company the go-ahead, right? Okay, you're FDA approved. Well, now they got to take all this time to scale up. So who knows how much longer that's going to take? Right. And if you're a stem cell company, you know, I mean, this is a shot in the back. They got to do a bone marrow extraction. They got to separate your stem cells from the rest of your bone marrow fluid. They freeze it. It's a full process, and it's an expensive process. And to scale up for the mass quantity of people that have this disease, you know, that's going to be even more time that they don't have. So we kind of need something to happen soon. And I believe it's possible. You know, I think we've kind of came up with a solution, and we've provided information to government officials that I think are willing to help. And it's just, I guess, you know, just a matter of time like everything else.
And they've done it before. It's not like this is... They've fast-tracked drugs that were in phase two because it's already been proven safe and it works. So they fast-tracked.
Is there any indication they might? Is there some reason to think they could?
Well, so right now the biggest problem with ALS is the fact that there is no biomarker. So providing data to the FDA is extremely difficult.
Biomarker being something in the blood that indicates you've got a problem.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
There are cancer markers. So if a doctor takes blood, they can find that you have cancer. not before it happens, but after it's already developed.
Exactly.
Then there's a cancer marker in your blood, but there's nothing with ALS.
Right, and you can kind of think of it as like a starting point. You know, like, well, if I'm going to provide data and we actually have a starting point to look at, well, now I'm providing you treatment. It's easy to show data if you're getting better or worse, you know, or if it's not doing anything. For ALS, you're talking about everybody kind of progresses at their own rate. They're not even sure if ALS is one specific disease. It may be potentially a multitude of diseases, you know, all kind of caught under one umbrella. So the understanding of this disease is not quite there yet. And I mean, for the first time ever, we got treatment that's actually helping. But if we keep this same process that we use for, let's say, any other drug like arthritis or, you know, headaches or whatever, if we continue that same process, it doesn't make sense. It's just not going to work for ALS. It's never going to work for ALS if you can't provide data.
It's like apples and oranges.
Exactly.
Very different sort
exactly.
of thing.
So you it needs to be treated that way.
You mentioned Pete Frates. I just want to remind everybody who Pete Frates was. The Ice Bucket Challenge was a big thing. People online were doing videos where they were dropping buckets of ice on their head. Somebody challenged me, and I decided I didn't want to do it. It wasn't about ALS. It was just, I don't like being cold,
yeah.
So I wasn't going to do it. But, you know, he died recently and passed away. But really, you know, because of what he did, there were 17 million people that did that Ice Bucket Challenge, and that raised about $220 million for ALS research. So what he did made a big difference, and as a result, there are things being done today that might not have been able to be done if it hadn't been for Pete Frates.
Yeah.
I want to ask Amanda, you've been nice and quiet, and respectfully silent over there, but you've got a lot of feelings.
Yeah, just really quickly about Pete Frates. When Eric first got diagnosed, we actually reached out to them, and our family had the opportunity to meet with his parents, and they were so helpful. And, you know, of course, we were lost, confused, devastated, all of the emotions. And they really took the time to kind of guide us because, of course, when you're given this diagnosis, there's really no path to follow. And we're really thankful for them. And we were, of course, very sad when we heard about the news that Pete had passed away. But we're very thankful for what he did and his family did. And, you know, treatments like Neurone and the other ones that are close, they probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that family. So.
And you're doing much the same way with hashtag AxeALS.
Right.
Like he was doing with the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Exactly. And that was something we kind of first talked about was like, you know, people need to know more about this disease. And, of course, the Ice Bucket Challenge was amazing. And
did you do it?
I didn't.
Did any of you do it?
Oh,
you're all
did.
Wimps like me.
I know.
I think I did. Yeah.
But we were kind of like, we need another one of those because not only did people maybe know about ALS, but they didn't fully understand kind of what it does to your body. And
I want to ask you,
yeah,
because it's the elephant in the room thing that we brought up earlier. That you got married in July.
Right.
He was diagnosed in August. You got a whole life ahead of you, your family, you're thinking about a new house, you're all these wonderful things. This must have been like being hit by a Mack truck.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's been extremely hard. Like Eric said, you know, we were looking at houses and, you know, thinking about what we're going to name our kids, and now we're fighting for his life. And yeah, it's been really, really hard. But, you know, the support, like we keep saying, has been absolutely amazing. And then just knowing that there's treatments that are so close, that's kind of what we hold on to for, you know, hoping that he can get them very soon because he feels it every day.
You're a second grade teacher.
Yeah.
And you've taken time off to be with Eric and to help him through this struggle.
Yes.
How is that for you?
I mean, I'm so thankful that I'm able to be with him every day and help him, you know, go to doctor's appointments and make sure we're eating the right food and doing what we need to do at home. But, you know, obviously it makes you appreciate just like a normal life, you know, waking up, going to work, like, you know, we'd do anything to go back to that. So it's been hard, but I'm just thankful that I can be with him every day.
She's special, isn't she?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Extremely special.
All right. Well, the whole family is special, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're all banding together. You're all doing the best you can. Hashtag is AXALS, AXEALS. Final thoughts, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, if there's any other questions, we do have a website, StevensNation.com, and we got a lot of information on there that we could, if you're anyone's interested, they can go look that up. But no, thank you for having us on the show.
StevensNation.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Eric?
Thanks for having us. I think just more awareness that we could bring to this, and the more people educate themselves about this disease, I think, change is going to happen. And we just got to keep pushing, keep spreading the word, and just keep grinding. So that's kind of what we're doing, and we hope that, you know, the whole world will join us.
Got to keep fighting the fight, right, Amanda?
Yeah. Right.
All right. Thank you all for being here. Thanks for joining us for this episode of What the Hal. And subscribe if you haven't already. Just do it on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatthehalpodcast.com. And thanks for joining us, guys. This is a tough story.
Thank you.
We'll be following up.
Thank you.
See you all next time. Thank you.
Thanks.